Okay. Good evening. Welcome to the Wednesday, October 2nd, 2024 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Karen Ray Russell?
Here.
Director Linda Austin?
Here. Will you all join me in the flag salute?
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, agenda review. Is everything?
I'm good. I'm
good. As presented, okay.
Sound like Travis is putting together an erector set over there.
I do have one modification to the, and it's on the closed session. It's my performance evaluation. I'll pull that with the missing third member of the of the board, so we'll complete that at next month when everybody can participate.
Okay, so we will pull the public employee performance evaluation of the general manager. Okay. Is there any public comment for items that are not on the agenda? Seeing no one here, we will move on to item five is the consent agenda, which is the approval of the warrants and the approval of the meeting minutes of August 7th, 2024. Any discussion?
No questions.
Okay, any public comment? None. Can we get a motion? To approve the...
You're going faster than I am. Hang on. All right. I will move that we approve items 5A and 5B as presented.
I'll second that.
Director Karen Ray Russell?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All righty. Now we will move on to item six, our action items. 6A is the presentation and approval of the fiscal year ending June 2023 financial audit.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is the 2023 fiscal year ending financial audit report. This audit's been prepared by auditing firm Moss Levy Hartsheim. The presentation tonight will be given by Secretary Bookkeeper Ms. Amy Simpson. While we have Travis Holy on the line from the firm to answer any questions that the board might have. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Simpson so that she can provide the presentation. Thank you.
All right, good evening, ladies of the board. This is your 2023 financial audit. Tonight's recommendation is that the board receive a presentation of the audit report of the district's financial records by Moss Levy and Hartsheim, the district's independent auditor, resolve questions and call for any necessary revisions, and file the 2022-2023 financial audit. Moss Levy and Hartsheim was hired as the district's independent auditor to review district financial statements and records and met with district staff to develop the fiscal year 2022-23 audit. State law requires that every general purpose local government publish an annual report on its financial position and activity, and that the report be audited by an independent firm or certified public accountants. The goal of the independent audit is to provide a reasonable assurance that the district's financial statements are free of material misstatements. In addition, the audit is responsible for providing an independent review of the district's internal financial controls. The district's financial statements, internal documents, and financial controls have been audited by the certified public accountant firm of Moss Levy and Hartsheim for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2023. The district has received a clean, unmodified opinion for the 2023 fiscal year audit. Travis Hole, CPA from Moss Levy Hartsheim, is on the phone to present the firm's final audit report of the district's financial records. Mr. Hole and staff are available to respond to questions from board members regarding the fiscal year 23 audit. If the board finds it is satisfied, staff asks approval of the audit with any appropriate revisions by motion. So tonight we have the opinion. The audit report will include an unmodified opinion, which is the highest
and free from materialist statement. They did not encounter any major issues with the internal controls of the district during the audit. This slide shows some of the more important highlights of the audit. Net position, the district's net position increased from $20,484,919 to $22,592,408 during the year. The district's revenue exceeded the district's expenses by $2,107,489,000 during the year. Next slide. Construction in progress. The district completed multiple projects during the fiscal year. The total value of completed projects that were previously in construction in progress was $695,220, and these projects are now being depreciated as fixed assets. Long-term liabilities. The district's long-term liabilities increased from $30,687,994 to $30,734,338 during the fiscal year, as you can see in the note. The district's long-term liabilities are made up of the certificates of participation that were taken out for the redundancy project, compensated absences, and other post-employment benefits. In conclusion, Mossegian Hartzheim have given the district an unmodified opinion, which is the highest opinion they can give on an independent audit, and they did not encounter any major issues with the internal controls of the district during the audit. Travis Hull, the auditor, is available by telephone to answer any questions the board may have.
I just have one just for the record, and that is a conversation that I had with Mr. Gent coming in today when the staff report says clean modified. So I was trying to find in here where it says clean unmodified, and it doesn't say clean modified or clean unmodified in here. So I guess the question would be for Travis, where do I find that, and then can we correct the record as it comes forward for minutes next time?
Travis, did you hear that?
Why don't you put it by your speaker?
Correct.
There you go.
Yeah, so she won't see that in the opinion letter. The closest thing that she'll see to that is on page one of the report, which is the independent auditor's report, where it says, you know, the financial statements are referred to present fairly in all material respects to the respective financial position. Unmodified is just a word they use to, there's different, you know, there's modified if there were issues with the financial statements. Unmodified is just the word that's used for clean audit reports. We use the word clean just because that seems to be the word that boards understand the most. So you won't see the words clean or unmodified in the auditor's report.
Okay.
I couldn't hear, is it, what is clean, modified, clean, unmodified? I know he gave the description, but can we get it again? I couldn't understand what the difference means.
He just needs probably to talk a little slower, that's all.
Do you want me to read you the description of unmodified?
Sure.
Yeah, I can answer that a little bit. So with audit reports, unmodified, we don't audit everything down to the dollar, but with an unmodified opinion, it just means that we believe, you know, we do everything with materiality levels, and so we audit down to a certain level, and as long as it's within, you know, what we consider to be a reasonably stated amount, and as long as there's no material misstatements. So that would be if we, you know, we have a materiality level that we're doing the audit for, and if there was a difference in that, you know, we would either recommend a journal entry, which we've done, or, you know, say, you know, if we don't fix this, we can't give an opinion on the audit. And so we, with the unmodified opinion, we're just saying that everything is reasonably stated within the materiality level.
Where you listen in,
not
where you speak.
Okay.
She's pointing, I'm sorry, I'm trying to help Amy out. She's pointing the mic where we would be speaking into the phone rather than when we're hearing the phone. So put the mic up by the top where you would be listening, and then we'll hear him a lot better.
Okay, one more time, Travis.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying we do audits based on materiality levels, and so when we're auditing, you know, when we're looking at cash or fixed assets, assets or anything. We're not auditing everything down to a dollar. We have materiality levels that we do the audit for. And so an unmodified opinion just means that we're confident that all of the balances are reasonably stated and free from material misstatement. And so if we see any balances that are outside of the materiality levels that we're using for the audit, we recommend journal entries, which are then booked for the audit. If for whatever reason the district, you know, didn't agree with the journal entry that we posted, we wouldn't be able to give an unmodified opinion, but that hasn't been the case here. So I always try to make it clear that, yeah, with the unmodified opinion, that doesn't mean that we audited everything down to a dollar. It's just that it's at least reasonably stated within the materiality levels that the audit was completed under.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
So was that, Amy, just a typo?
Yes.
Okay, so can we just make a triple check when the minutes come forward that that was corrected?
Yes.
I can just see that coming back at some point.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think I have any questions, so do we... Is this a... This is just a presentation, then we don't... Or do we approve?
No, we have to
approve the fiscal year ending.
We have to open and close public comment.
Okay. So I'm going to open public comment on item 6A for the approval of the fiscal year, the financial audit approval of the fiscal year ending June 2023. Seeing no public comment, I'll bring it back. Is there any other discussions? I think it's all...
You do need a motion, though. It says receive and file here, but you need a motion so it can be signed, right?
It says approval.
Or?
Legal counsel?
Do you happen to know?
I don't happen to know whether we sign the report. I would think the report is signed by the auditor, and the motion that we take is to receive and file it.
This says on the cover, we will not finalize the audit till we receive your response, a signed and dated management representation letter to be prepared by you. So do we need to direct you to do that, Jeremy?
The management letter has been completed and provided to Moss Levy.
So this isn't for us to sign.
So I think maybe we should ask Travis to clarify some of these questions as far as the process moving forward, Travis, for adoption of the audit. What can you remind us the next steps once this is finalized? What action do you need back from our board to finalize the audit?
All right. So we have received it and wait for Jeremy to sign it. So,
all right. Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Travis. Okay. We'll move on now to item 6B, authorization to establish a permanent position of laboratory manager, adopt salary range, and approve new and revised job descriptions.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is, I'll just talk briefly. The district is required to maintain an ELAP, a state ELAP accredited laboratory. And in order to do that, we need certain staffing levels and certain expertise in-house to be able to maintain that level of accreditation. And so Mr. Jones has put together this request for your board to consider adding that position to the district so that we continue to provide those laboratory services on site at the sanitation district. And Michael, go ahead.
Okay. Good evening, ladies of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent. And just to kind of go off of Jeremy, what I've done is I've outlined the rationale that necessitates the new district laboratory manager position, and revision to the existing laboratory technician job description for the board's consideration. One of those items is the State Water Resources Control Board adoption of the NALAC Institute 2016 standard. And basically, this new standard outlines management requirements, which require a technical manager and quality manager, and describes the additional duties each position is responsible for as it pertains to the lab. Per this new standard, and due to the district having limited staffing, the new proposed laboratory manager position can and would act as both the technical manager and the quality manager. In addition, the new standard creates an extensive workload due to its many requirements, and the district's laboratory cannot maintain compliance with the sole laboratory technician. And also, the district's laboratory technician has taken on this considerable task of bringing the district's laboratory into compliance with these new standards, and we are currently awaiting approval of its application for our ELAB certification for the year 2025. An additional item is the redundancy project startup commissioning sampling and analysis and continued process control sampling analysis following the completion of the redundancy project. The district's laboratory currently performs approximately 2,133 samples and analysis on an annual basis for process control and to ensure compliance with the district's NPDES permit. In preparation of startup and commissioning of the redundancy project's new activated sludge process, the district's laboratory began performing additional process control samples and analysis in August of 2023. The additional process control accounted for 936 samples and analysis performed in addition to what is currently required. Furthermore, additional samples and analysis will be necessary for the new activated sludge system for process control once the system is fully operational. This sampling will account for approximately 2,237 samples and analysis performed in addition to what is currently required. This brings the total annual samples and analysis being performed to approximately 5,306. Once operation staff have established a good data set, the total number of annual samples and analysis is expected to decrease approximately 25% to almost 4,000 samples and analysis performed. Additionally, we have our pretreatment program implementation. The district is currently in the process of developing an updated pretreatment program to regulate users, primarily industrial food service establishments and some commercial in its service area. The objectives of the pretreatment program are to prevent interference and or upset with treatment operations, pass-through of conventional or toxic pollutants, harm to the treatment plant and or collection system, contamination of biosolids, and worker exposure to chemical hazards. In the process of developing the updated pretreatment program, the district's consultant, Larry Walker and Associates, provided a memorandum, which is attached, to outline the two potential approaches for implementing the program and provide a recommendation for the district to consider for program implementation. The two approaches provided are that the district implement the pretreatment program for its entire service area, or member agencies implement the pretreatment program for their respective service area. Based on the consultant's evaluation, it is recommended that the district take the responsibility for fully implementing the program because it helps centralize the effort for consistent implementation across the district's entire service area and mitigates the need for member agencies to identify and train staff to implement the program within their respective jurisdictions. Staff included requirements for implementation and oversight in the new laboratory manager and revised laboratory technician job descriptions in preparation for implementation and continuation of the district's pretreatment program. So moving on to fiscal considerations, staff has reviewed similar positions in the San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County area and recommends a proposed salary range of the new laboratory manager position be $6,624 to $8,051 monthly. This recommended salary range may increase due to ongoing union negotiations. Staff will be monitoring the financial impact of the new proposed position, and if budget adjustments are necessary, will return to your board for direction. Staff is not recommending any change to the current laboratory technician salary and feels it is within the range of similar positions in the area. In addition, staff has contacted Barter Wells to get preliminary budgetary numbers to perform a rate study to account for recent inflation and new operational costs. The district's last rate study was performed in 2019 and was initially anticipated to be performed following completion of the redundancy project in 2023, but has been pushed back due to project delays. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions the board may have.
Do you have any questions?
I just have one. So I'm looking at attachment three. I'm just looking at the salary schedule. So we've had 11 FTEs for a while, right? So is this, are we going to end up with one more FTE? It's because we would hire in, if we either hire this person or if someone from within moves up, then we would fill that. Or are we going to, I don't know how that's going to shake down in the end.
So I'm not familiar with FTE.
Full-time employees.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
Sorry.
Yes, so this would be an additional full-time employee, so it would move to 12.
And then there's three others that are at zeros there on that chart. It's on, there aren't page numbers here, but it says 6B attachment 3.
Mm-hmm.
So are we actively, go ahead, sure.
Well, the only reason I'm hesitating is because we're going from 10 to 11. I'm looking at Amy and Michael. We should all know how many people work at the plant, but there's 10, right? Well, there's the temporary workers, but there's 10 full-time permanent.
Oh, it's only 10?
Yeah, and we're going from 10 to 11.
Okay.
With and this then, request.
But then we have three that are, like, not filled, so is there a chance we would be going to 14?
So the intern and operator one is kind of there to be a career series that heads to the operator two. So
So
those are all linked. And then there's the maintenance assistant, which we have no intention of filling that position.
That was my question. All right, that's it. Sorry, I made that so clean as mud. So it was clear
no
as mud.
Worries.
Sorry about that.
I wanted to ask about the pre-treatment program. I've been reading out. What, can you just explain it and what exactly we'll be doing with that? Like you say, with like restaurants and things, what is the procedure? What is the process of that?
So basically you're... pre-treatment program for your wastewater facility is essentially to protect any pass-through. So it's basically for commercial and industrial users and also food service establishments. And it basically sets standards on what they can discharge to, say, our collection system. And the reason you want to control that is, one, it could affect your treatment system. It could affect your treatment facility. It could any toxic or non-toxic pollutants can pass through the facility and then make it on through to the environment, or you could expose your treatment staff to said chemicals. And so basically what this does is just establishes guidelines that these industrial users or commercial users have to abide by. And then once it's established, we'll have, say, said staff to perform, say, annual inspections of these facilities to make sure that they're, inspections and sampling of these facilities to make sure that they're staying within those guidelines. And if not, we could issue, say a violation or a corrective action.
And this is not started yet.
It's in the works.
In the works.
Sorry for lack of a better word. It's in the works right now.
Yeah.
It's in the draft phase. And the idea is once we've recently received a final draft, just a draft, and we're going to reach out to our member agencies to provide them with this. And then from that, we'll receive comments, make any necessary changes, and then bring it to our board, and then ask for approval to proceed.
So then how do you identify that? You go to each city and identify the commercial uses and
industrial users?
And
they actually just recently did that, and they get commercial lists or forget the name of the specific list, but basically a list of commercial businesses within the member agencies. We've reached out to each member agency and received those lists, and basically they review those lists, look them up, and see if there's any kind of red flags or anybody that needs like further inspection or could maybe in the future be permitted. And so that has been completed.
And so on the rate study, we're going to that will be done after the redundancy project is completed.
We certainly want to get moving on the rate study because it has been a number of years now since we've adopted the last rate increase was in 2019. The last rate study was done in 2016. That's a slight correction to Michael's staff report. But I wanted to go back on the pretreatment program just real quickly and just use some specific examples. So right now the district permits two industrial users, and those are both RV dump stations. And so that's something that's monitored under a pretreatment program. But if we look at the community-wide now, we know we have some food service, like some microbreweries that have opened up in the community, and they're brewing beer, and they have a waste discharge from that brewery process, and if they're discharging that to the sewer, that's no longer standard waste that we know comes in from residential use. And so that's a heavier load than what you would expect from a normal commercial business because they're wasting that what's often like the hops and barley mush waste that's the brine's a separate program that we run, but we also have like medical facilities. And when Michael's talking about hazardous exposure, like we want to make sure medical facilities aren't, and they have other rules that prevent them from discharging medical waste and radioactive waste to the sewer. But that's the type of stuff that we're monitoring for. And the hospital funeral homes, they generate waste. They make requests on what to do with it. And we need to have rules and things in place to be able to respond to say yes or no on when we can and can't. And that's what this program will allow us to have, to say, yes, you can have this cannabis processing facility, but we can only take this waste or this waste or like waste of this concentration. And if it's outside of that, you have to pre-treat your waste to a standard that we will take. And that's why it's a pre-treatment program. Like you might have to do treatment on site or find alternative disposal. And that's what we're really trying to do, is to be responsible and to create a quality of water to move forward with any type of recycling. You have to have a program like this fully implemented, because you can't be sending water out that might have these type of exposures that aren't fully documented and known.
Great. Well, thank you, guys. Thank you very much. I'll open it for public comment on this. Nope, seeing no public for public comment. So are we to decide the, it says duty.
I'll move that we authorize the district administrator to establish a permanent position of a laboratory manager, adopt salary range, and approve new and revised job descriptions.
Second.
Director Karen
Mary
Russell?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. That will take us to the amendment for the RENCON biological monitoring.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is authorization to execute amendment number 3 for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project biological monitoring services with RENCON consultants. So we're requesting that you authorize me to execute a budget adjustment for biological monitoring services in the amount of $21,199. RENCON's 36-month contract dated October 15, 2020, expired October 14, 2023. The district extended the contract term Amendment 1 on October 13, 2023 with no change in scope or budget because it was they still had budget, and it was there was adequate budget for them to continue work. The proposed amendment is based on the biological monitoring services needed during the repair of SC2, the secondary clarifier, and is based on an assumed additional 6 months of services for the repair of the secondary clarifier structure. And so, as you're aware, that like we've a lot of the major consultants we've addressed with extending their contracts, MKN, Kennedy Jenks. And so this is our biological monitoring service. They come out if there's any rainfall, and we know we're going to get into that coming into October. Their charges are going to start implementing. Whenever there's a little bit of rain, they have to come look to see if there's any frogs on site. And so this budget adjustment is meant to extend that contract and that effort. And fiscal considerations, as we've communicated with most of these SC2 damages, these costs are being passed through to Kennedy Jenks because of the failure of SC2. And so we will be seeking reimbursement from them for that $21,199. With that, that completes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions the board might have.
I have
no questions.
Wanted to make sure we're being reimbursed. So any public comment on this item? Seeing none, can we make a motion?
I will make a motion that we authorize the district administrator to execute a budget amendment for biological monitoring services for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project with Rincon Consultants in the amount of $21,199.
I will second it.
Roll call, Director Ray Russell?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All righty. We'll go down to 6D, the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. I've got a brief administrator's report for you this evening. Some updates on some capital projects with the redundancy project. Obviously, we're still working on the secondary clarifier repair. So the micropile installation is complete. If you recall, the micropiles are the long nails, if you will, that go into the that go 66 feet into the ground below the clarifier to anchor the floor to the ground. Contractor is currently preparing to pour replacement slabs, the new floor in the clarifier. Construction activity is expected to be completed on December 30th. District staff will then begin a 45-day startup of the new process. And we will inform your board a little bit about what we'll be doing during that process at a future board item, but we've been working with, we will be in 24-hour, 7-day-a-week startup operations for between 4 and 6 weeks to stand up the new biology. And so we'll all be working some modified schedules to ensure that that happens. And that's done because we really are growing a new plant, a plant like biological plant, not treatment plant. And so that new biology needs continuous monitoring to avoid any type of failure. And you want to avoid failure because we'll actually be bringing in seed from another facility. And by seed, it's the biology. So we'll be bringing in from Pismo Beach's wastewater treatment plant some of their bacteria to seed the new aeration basins.
Is it a little bit just like a sourdough starter?
It is almost identically like a sourdough. And we could tour the whole plant, and I could show you, like, our sourdough and how we, you know, have to waste or, you know, bake bread or waste it, right? Like, you can make it. It's very similar to sourdough because your sourdough is bacteria. That's what's giving it the sourness. We also have our cogeneration project where we're going to capture and reuse methane gas generated by the district's digesters to generate power and heat for the facility. We continue to meet with our Southland is the third party agency wing of PG&E that's running the program, and so we continue to meet monthly to monitor progress on that project. Some miscellaneous items. SEIU and the district continue negotiations. The district I will be providing an overview to of the sanitation district and our current efforts at the OCSD on October 9th. That's a week from tonight here in this room. I attended a flood control zone 1 and 1A meeting on September 17th. That's the flood channel that runs behind the wastewater treatment plant, and I sit on that committee, and they're doing some work and prepping for wet weather as we move into October in the fall. The county is working on a Meadow Creek Lagoon restoration project, and I sit on the science panel that the National Marine Fisheries required the county to stand up. And so the science panel is made up of different technical experts, a lot of regulators, state parks, California Fish and Wildlife, agencies like that. And in the sanitation district, they asked me to sit on as an engineering component. And then on September 11th, Creeklands, which used to be Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, and the San Luis Coastal RCD, the Resource Conservation District, held a meeting on prioritizing projects in the Arroyo Grande Creek watershed. And that's something that I like to monitor because, again, the AG Creek Channel watershed is what runs through the levee channel system behind the treatment plant. And so being sited where we have a flood risk, it's important to pay attention to the projects and changes that are happening in that channel. And with that, that completes my administrator's report, and I'll take a moment to answer any questions you might have.
I just have a comment that I really appreciate your input at the Zone 11A meetings and what you really keep on top of the creek and the levee and everything, so you're very...
Yeah, it was a little unfortunate to see the county show up with an entirely new team on the public works side. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was an opportunity to provide some continuity because my history does go back to 2008 right, on the levee.
Well, and I can report, because it's happening literally right across the street from my house, the Gauge Project is rolling. Cranes every day. Starts up at 7 a.m. It's really loud, and they have this tube about this wide. I don't know, probably 4 feet wide, 3 feet wide. They're diverting the creek while they remove the old concrete that's in there. And I think it's due to be done in the next 3 weeks or so. I think it's got about 3 weeks left on that project, but that'll be really interesting to have that done.
And that is one of the projects from that last bullet that has been implemented, where I'd say that they were prioritizing projects, and that is one of those projects.
Yep. All right. Very good. Thank you, Jeremy. Mr. Gibb. We'll go now to Mr. Jones and our plant operations report.
Good evening, ladies of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent, presenting the plant operations report for the reporting period of August 1st through September 27th. During this period, there were no violations of the district's NPDES permit to report. All process values were within permit limitations, as shown on the monthly plant data for August 2024 and monthly plant data for September 2024. Operations staff completed multiple operations and maintenance tasks. We also completed a multitude of work orders, some training that staff participated on, was in computer-based training on active shooter response, fire prevention safety, ethics in the workplace, and forklift safety. There were no call-outs during this reporting period. Just want to move on to the report on the cause of our July 18th and July 31st exceedances. On August 6th, district operations staff performed a hydraulic flush of the fixed film reactor. Operation staff typically perform this hydraulic flushes of the FFR quarterly or as needed to wash off accumulated solids, snails, and fly larvae. During the FFR flush, operation staff noticed a substantial amount of air bubbles coming from the bottom of our secondary clarifier number one near the center stilling well. The air bubbles were observed for approximately 4 hours before abruptly stopping. Following the initial observation on August 6th, district operations staff contacted the redundancy project design engineer and the SE1 mechanism process engineer to figure out the potential cause. On August 8th, district operations staff met with the SE1 mechanism process engineer, and his assessment was that the air bubbles in SE1 were likely due to what's termed island formation, where material gets hung up on the rake arms, the rake arm adjacent to the SE1 manifold, and builds a little island. As that island forms, it densifies, and the sludge age of the material increases to a point where septicity or nitrification can occur, causing air bubbles. The process engineer offered a couple of ways to check this, and one was to perform a sludge death check in front of the rake arm and check for sludge accumulation in that area, which would be very dense at the bottom. Two was to check the underflow concentrations. They'll drop when there's active bubbling, then come back up when the bubbling stops. Additionally, the process engineer offered a couple of ways to mitigate the active bubbling. However, he noted that since it's occurring within the feed well, the phenomenon may not be contributing to water quality issues. So one was to increase the rake speed by 10 to 15% to reduce the potential for island formation without impacting treatment. The second was to increase sludge removal rates to 600 gallons per minute periodically or once an hour. Following the meeting, district operations staff performed a sludge depth check at SE1 and found an abnormally high sludge blanket depth of approximately 40 inches near where the bubbles were observed. Immediately following, staff ramped up the return sludge pump to minimize the blanket depth or any island formation that had occurred. During the ramp up of the return sludge pump, operations staff observed very dark solids along with a very strong septic smell coming from the pump discharge. Additionally, staff found a heavy buildup of solids on top of the manifold that wasn't being removed due to the buildup of solids in the SE1 from the impacted solids removal manifold. I strongly believe this may have been the cause of the fecal coliform exceedances. Additionally, the intermittent bubbling could have potentially kicked up heavily concentrated solids, causing bypass into the SE1 effluent, which in turn caused a large disinfection demand that was not achievable due to the heavy solid or bacterial concentrations. I've attached a photo of the red of the SE1 manifold, just to observe. Operations staff have updated its SE1 operational procedures to mitigate solids buildup and to prevent reoccurrence. As of today, and following the update of operational procedures, there have been no bubbles, buildup, or sludge blanket observed at SE1. These operational procedures are expected to continue until the successful startup and commissioning of the district's activated sludge treatment process. So in 2004, we have the three exceedances, and our latest exceedance is due to expire January 27th. Moving on to some projects that staff completed. We completed the bollard installation project on July 25th. District operations staff completed the installation of new safety bollards around the district's new emergency generator. This project consisted of cutting and augering 14 holes, installation and leveling of bollard sleeves, cement backfill and finishing, bollard cutting to appropriate height of 42 inches, and painting of bollards. District operator Mario De Leon was the project lead, and with assistance from district operations staff, was able to complete this project in approximately 1 month's time. The installation of the new safety bollards will protect the district's new emergency generator from vehicle impacts. Moving on to some photos of staff. In this first photo, I have district laboratory technician Erica Frost performing biochemical oxygen demand analysis in the district's laboratory. In the next photo, it's of district operator Christopher Rigoni excavating the district's sludge beds. And then in the final photo, we have district operator in training, intern Robert Grajeda, showing off the difference between a dirty mechanical bar screen and a freshly power washed mechanical bar screen. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions the board may have.
I don't have a question, but it looks like we got lucky, is really what it came down to, because we had just had those exceedances we couldn't explain, and then the very next week you see this anomaly, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just because the timing of when you would have done this process anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the reasons we were performing the flush was because of the exceedances, and then during the flush is when we observed those gas bubbles, and yeah, thankfully, like, we were able to pinpoint and figure out what the heck was going on.
Good job.
Yeah, no,
to you and your staff. Who saw the bubbles?
Justin Music was the first person.
You just give him a handshake for me, okay? Say, right. I appreciate his keen eye.
Will do.
Very good. Thank you so much. All right. Where am I? Closed session. Is there any board member communications? None? Okay, so closed session. We have a conference with labor negotiators. Is there any announcement to make, or we just
head into closed session?
Go to closed session.
Keith always does it.
Did you want to? I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
Did you want to announce that we're only doing one of the two closed sessions?
Yeah, so this evening, as I mentioned during agenda review, I will be pooling my performance appraisal for tonight to allow for all three board members to be present during my review. And but we will be meeting to talk about the SEIU negotiations in closed session. Is that call? Yeah. Sorry.